You're with Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And hello, and I'm filling in for Mike Ryan. So in the news today, we have the Prime Minister, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, has walked back an election promise to legislate a new federal anti-corruption commission by year's end, saying that the government's pledge is only to introduce the bill to Parliament. Now, I suppose they're worried about the lost sitting days arising from the official period of mourning of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and that would take out a bit of time there. But really, I think if they're really serious about corruption, they would put it through. But then again, if they're really serious about corruption, I really don't know. I really don't think the Corruption Commission would necessarily stop corruption. Just the same as the Royal Commission doesn't necessarily stop problems even after hours and hours and thousands of hours of going through all sorts of scandals in the past. The corruption just keeps happening over and over again. Call me cynical, but that just seems to be the case. But I am optimistic. I'm not totally cynical. I do know that if more and more people stand up for justice, and what we need to do is educate, organise the citizenry for real changes, I think we can have some decent change. And if there is a genuine legal process, a corruption commission, what have you, it can work. But at this stage, I think it's not working very well at all. So I don't hold out too much hope for an anti-corruption commission. In other news, we have the New York governor, Kathy Hochul's COVID emergency powers have just come to an end. Hip, hip, hooray, about time. They should never have happened in the first place. But with this power, she suspended New York's competitive bidding laws and was and awarded an overpriced $600 million plus COVID testing to one of her top donors. So this is a day which should never have happened. We're at a point in history over 2.5 years later, after what should have been known with the Diamond Princess, that ship with the people with COVID on board. We knew the fatality rate. We knew that it wasn't the emergency that the authorities made it out to be, but governments all over the world have pushed this agenda. Fear, fear, fear. And a lot of people bought into it, unfortunately. But, you know, they can't keep that narrative going for too much longer. And finally, Kathy Hochul's called it quits, not renewing the emergency powers in New York. Similarly, in other news in New Zealand, after terrorising unvaccinated people in New Zealand for over 2 years, New Zealand has finally dropped the vaccine and mask mandates. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says it's time to turn the page on the pandemic. Well, as I said before, we should never have had the emergency powers, the mandates in the first place. Now, I think it's just the genie's out of the bottle. I think more and more people just realise the whole thing was just nonsense, and these politicians can't get away with continuing the same narrative when really clearly there's no emergency. People can see that the jabs don't work, and anyone who's talking to their friends and neighbours and family know that there's a good chance that one of their loved ones or someone they know has had some sort of an adverse reaction, perhaps a serious adverse reaction. Perhaps they know someone who's died, and it might not be officially acknowledged, but they have a bit of a hunch that it could well be the result of one of those jabs, the poisonous jabs, the experimental jabs that should never have been mandated. And of course, in New Zealand now, those mandates are now over, and the mask mandate too. And of course, that was all based on absolute nonsense. So that's the bit of a news there. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either Apple App Store or Google Play so that you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime, available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Digging deeper into the news.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jeremy back here again. Reports are coming in from some embalmers that are seeing unusual blood clots in the bodies of the recently deceased. It would be good to have an expert in the field to make sense of this, particularly since these unusual blood clots have coincided with the rollout of the experimental COVID injections. Dr. Roger Hodgkinson is a Canadian pathologist. He is a graduate of Cambridge University in the United Kingdom, and he has held a number of distinguished positions, including assistant professor at the University of Alberta, president of the Alberta Society of Laboratory Physicians, chairman of the committee that sets the General Pathology Board examination for the Royal College of Physicians of Canada, and CEO of a large community pathology laboratory. Welcome to TNT Radio, Roger.
Hello, Jeremy. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Yeah, likewise. And in this time, we're in scary times, but at least I can see just a glimmer of hope there that some governments are realizing that they can't keep pushing this insanity any longer. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it could well get worse before it gets better. There may be tremendous pushback if they try to reintroduce the madness that has failed miserably. But what I'm saying about getting worse is when the statistics start getting crystallized, I'm predicting a revulsion in the population, those people who were kept ignorant. I'm predicting a revulsion, the scale of which we have never seen. And I believe that will create the opportunity for, instead of the Great Reset, quite the contrary, I believe it's going to set the opportunity for the Great Reject, the scale of which I'm likening to Magna Carta II, to redefine democracy in ways that are traditional. That, I believe, is on the cards, and it's something we're working very hard towards in here in Alberta, Canada, with a movement that's intended to result in the independent Republic of Alberta, over which we have great control of governance of the various authorities that have made our life miserable over the last 2.5 years. So, as Napoleon once famously said, never stop your enemy from screwing up. It makes them easier to beat. I think it may get worse in certain respects, but at the end of the day, I'm filled with optimism that human dignity will triumph.
Well, you are a great champion of freedom, and you've passionately stood alongside those Canadian truckers, you know, the salt of the earth people in Canada. I think people should just have a listen to what you said about these truckers and the great courage that they had in this short sound clip.
They got gonads bigger than their trucks.
So everyone loves you for that, Roger. And the truckers certainly did too.
Well, I thought that might appeal to an Australian audience. Yes.
Yeah, so
it was said tongue in cheek, but I was there and I saw it all personally. I saw highly motivated, genuine, ordinary people who just had enough. And the beautiful thing about this, of course, is that what really this whole freedom movement started right here in Alberta, Canada. Mm. It morphed internationally, admittedly with additional provocation, such as the Dutch farmers. But it's led to a worldwide movement in which there's a uniform rejection of the controls that we've been experiencing. And that's why I said earlier on, I believe it's the feedstock for a new era in politics.
Absolutely. Now, I did want to ask you about a few things, considering your expertise of being a pathologist. I think it's very important to understand what's going on with the blood clots. A veteran funeral director in Alabama, USA, Richard Hirschman, has said that he has seen and more than a dozen of his colleagues have seen some really unusual sorts of clots, bizarre fibrous clots in a substantial portion of their cases since the rollout of the COVID-19 injections. What do you make of this?
Well, these are very experienced people, and they're seeing a marked change in the appearance of blood clots that appear at autopsy routinely. These blood clots are basically different in that there are more of them, they're longer, but in particular, they have an unusual fibrous quality, making them tougher, you might say, when you're just holding them. Quite unusual, not seen in a normal autopsy, of which I've done hundreds. And so one has to respect their observation. What is remarkable, of course, is that this observation is coming from non-technical people, and it has not resulted in the intense investigation that you might have expected from traditional intellectual powerhouses of medical research. There has been some work done, and I could certainly elaborate on the current theory, if you like, Jeremy, as to why these blood clots look so unusual.
Yeah, please do.
I think it's necessary here to rewind a little bit in order to understand the full process from soup to nuts, you might say. If I may just talk about what happens after the injection into the arm with what I prefer to call the clot shot gene therapy. It's certainly not a traditional vaccine. So this material is injected into the deltoid muscle simply because it's a safe place. It's where all vaccines are injected, with the intent that it travels from there to the local lymph nodes in the axilla, the armpit, where the material is presented to the immune system. Now, normal vaccination is a one-step process. You inject a dead polio virus, for example, and the immune system then reacts to those unusual proteins, which are definitely not self, you might say. They're non-self. The clot shot is quite different. Your body becomes the toxin factory in a two-step process. Those nanoparticles with mRNA inside them basically fuse with some of the lymphoid cells in your armpit and elsewhere in your body where lymphoid tissue is present. And then those cells, by virtue of the instruction that the mRNA implies, those cells then start producing spike protein. The spike protein is then presented to adjacent cells that produce the antibodies and the T cell, the cellular immunity, which are the two essential features of an immune reaction. So it's a two-step process that's going on with this gene therapy. Now, most biological functions follow a bell-shaped curve. Everyone's familiar with intelligence curve, for example. Most people are in the middle. Some people are at either end. Now, we suspect that some people, unidentified when they're getting this injection, some people will be the hyper-reactors that produce more of this stuff than other people. To the extent that literally trillions of these particles, these spike protein particles, literally trillions of them are produced. And then in these unfortunate people who are producing much more than usual, a vast excess of this material floods the vascular system. And that's exactly when we start getting into trouble.
And we're told that this is a rare event, but it seems to be much more common than we're led to believe.
Well, there's a lot of subclinical consequences too that don't necessarily materialize as clinical symptoms, but which could be identified by virtue of the D-dimer test that I'll come to in a minute. Just because you're not sick doesn't mean to say you've not been affected by this process that I'm going to describe. So the vast excess. I'm sorry, Jeremy.
Yeah, right. We've got a break coming up in a minute or so, but yeah, just carry on.
This vast excess of the spike protein enters the general circulation, where there is lining every single blood vessel has the specific receptor for the spike protein called the ACE2 receptor on the inside of every blood vessel. When that spike protein interacts with that receptor, that is when the process of clotting starts for a number of reasons. It activates the coagulation cascade, the normal coagulation cascade directly. But the coagulation cascade can also be activated by the general inflammation that's present in the body because of the inflammation associated with the COVID infection. That attachment to the inside of the blood vessels creates a blood clot. Now, unfortunately, it's not a normal blood clot. It has characteristics that we call amyloid, which is basically an abnormal folding of the protein that is being produced in blood clotting.
Sorry, what was fibrin that name again?
Fibrin is the name of the protein that's produced as a result of blood clotting.
Right. And okay. I think just hold that thought. What we'll do is we'll go to the break now, and then we'll hear more about that later. This is TNT Radio.
Dolores Cahill on TNT Radio.
In 2020, I was invited, we'll say, onto a radio show, but the presenter said, this was now when I was warning about, well, and saying there was prevention and treatment and ivermectin, but this was like May, June of 2020. The presenter said, I know what you're doing is right, but 90% of our funding now comes from the government under this COVID-19 issue. And therefore, he said, I am going to not allow you to speak, and I'm going to essentially harass you so that you can't get your message out. Because if I don't do that, all the funding will be cut to the radio station and I'll be fired. So I actually said to him before the interview, I said, you know, this is time for you to make a decision and to allow people to speak so that people don't die. And not put, get another job, basically. I think what was interesting is that information was that 90% of the income came from the government only on condition that the radio stations censor people and don't allow people to hear the information that there was prevention and treatment.
Weekends with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Today's News Talk Radio. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Jeremy Beck here, and my guest is Dr. Roger Hodgkinson. So before the break, we were discussing these blood clots and the formation of them. So carry on.
Yes, yeah, so we've got as far as the spike protein initiating blood clotting in the very small blood vessels throughout the body, the capillaries. Mm. Now, those blood clots are unusual in a variety of respects. They're much more adherent to the inner lining of the blood vessel, and they're more resistant to the normal process that we have in the body of destroying blood clots. There's an enzyme called plasmin, which is intended to destroy blood clots. But these clots are more resistant to degradation. They do get degraded because of the, as you might have heard, the D-dimer test is a positive result of degradation of fibrin, the blood clot. What I said earlier.
Yeah, I have heard of D-dimer. If you can just explain that just for the layperson, what D-dimer tests are, because yes. I must admit I don't know much about them either.
Well, there is this three-step process. We have a protein called fibrinogen in solution in our blood, which is there ready to come out of solution to produce this fibrous protein called fibrin. Fibrin is the essence of the mesh of the blood clot. That fibrin, that is the essence of the blood clot, normally speaking, is broken down by an enzyme called plasmin into degradation products that are called D-dimer. These are the fragments of the fibrinogen that the enzyme produces by cutting it up into various short segments. That D-dimer is, of course, one of the classic tests for determining the severity of COVID infection. And a famous study was a GP in a rural community in Canada, Dr. Charles Hoff, who first drew world attention to the reality that a large number of his patients who'd been vaccinated, who felt perfectly well, 60%, were shown to have positive D-dimer test in their blood, which meant that even though they felt perfectly well, they were undergoing diffuse blood clotting throughout their body.
That's scary. And that may be the case for many people and they don't even know it, even though they feel fine. This is quite alarming, isn't it?
Precisely. They're unaware of it. When it gets more severe, when the clotting gets more intense and more strategic in its location, that's when these people start coming down with the classic consequences, why I call it the clot shot, with strokes, heart attacks, and thromboses in the deep veins of the leg, deep vein thrombosis, which can embolize to the lungs and kill you in short order. That's a continuum from people that are totally unaffected to people who have large clots that kill them. And in between, we have people who are clotting but feel perfectly well. But these clots are, in fact, blocking capillaries throughout their body in a random way. Some of those clots, if there's enough of them, will clog up the capillaries in the lungs where oxygen exchange occurs, and their PO2, their oxygen level, may drop without them even knowing it.
And we had all this mass testing for COVID. Everyone was lining up whether they were sick or not. And yet we haven't done any testing for the D-dimer, have we? Mass testing, that is.
No, it's not. It's not being widely used. It should be to identify those people that are at risk, because if they're shown to have a positive D-dimer test, then many people believe they should be given an anticoagulant to try and stop their blood from clotting as much as it is.
That's pretty wild. Now, can you explain what these white fibrous structures are in the blood that some people have seen, some of the embalmers have seen, and some of those dealing with those deceased people?
Yes, at autopsy, it's not unusual to find blood clots in the vessels that are occurring post-mortem, that means after death, in the normal fashion. These blood clots are typically dark red in color, and they're quite fragile. You can break them up quite easily. The blood clots that these embalmers are describing are quite different. They're bigger. They're variegated in color with whitish areas and reddish areas, and they're stiffer and not as fragile as the normal blood clots you see post-mortem in a normal autopsy. The supposition is that these blood clots were forming during life. And that's one of the reasons why some of these people would have died, because of the blood clots occurring in vital organs.
The reason
we call it amyloid is a technical term, and that's spelled AMYLOID. Amyloid is a general process by which proteins fold in an abnormal way. Not just fibrinogen, the blood clotting protein, but other proteins as well. It's thought to be, for example, a part of the picture of Alzheimer's in the brain. But the clots do have characteristics of amyloid, which is, as I said before, an abnormality of the folding of the fibrin that's produced by the spike protein attacking the ACE2 receptor on the inside of every single blood vessel in the body.
Wow. This is big stuff. This is huge. We need to go to a quick news break. This is TNT Radio.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. NASA has delayed its third attempt at launching its $4 billion mega rocket around the moon, blaming a stubborn fuel leak for the setback. Russia and Ukraine have expressed their interest in establishing a ceasefire around Europe's largest nuclear power plant, which has come under repeated fire on the front line. Sweden is still counting votes from its Sunday elections, and Japan is considering scrapping some of its pandemic border controls.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And I'm Jeremy Beck, and I'm with my guest, special guest, Dr. Roger Hodgkinson. So we were discussing some quite frightening things, I think, with these blood clots and potential for disasters happening for anyone who may be feeling quite well, but if those clots get up into the heart or the lungs or the brain, we could be in for some big trouble. Now, I do know that Dr. Ryan Cole, who heads one of America's leading medical laboratories, he said that he's found some unusually long blood clots, as long as 1 foot. Roger, could you explain why they would be that long?
Well, I think it's largely because there's been intense activation of the coagulation system simultaneously with a reduction in the normal ability of the body to dissolve that clot. So you have two reasons to explain why the clots are bigger. I should make it clear to everyone listening that these embalmers are seeing the big clots in the big blood vessels. The real damage in COVID are the microscopic blood clots that are occurring in the very small blood vessels, the capillaries throughout the entire body. That seems to be one of the principal ways in which end organ damage takes place.
Right. Okay. And would the mRNA jabs be the main culprit, or how about the viral vector jab, the one that AstraZeneca has put out? Would that potentially be doing the same thing?
Well, it's the spike protein that's the problem. AstraZeneca produces the spike protein by a different mechanism, but that, at the end of the day, we're talking about the spike protein as the principal reason why these blood clots are occurring. I would like to extend the analysis of these blood clots into a very important area, if I may, Jeremy.
Yes, sure.
And,
go ahead.
And that's the impact that it has on fertility.
Big concern.
There are many reasons why we're seeing this impact on live births, fertility dropping, etc., drop in spermatozoa counts, etc., etc. But I'd like to focus on just one small aspect of this blood clotting, namely the effect on the lining of the uterus. We know from thousands of reports of women post-vaccination who have developed menstrual abnormalities, heavy bleeding, postmenopausal women starting to bleed, girls starting to have menstrual bleeding when they've not entered menarche. And what's happening here, we believe, is that the lining of the uterus, you see, the endometrium, normally speaking, is the lushest tissue, the most fragile tissue in the entire human body. Mm. Pathologists see this regularly when we open up a uterus that's come from the operating room. The gynecologists don't see that. We do. You can put your finger in it. It's not very thick. It's a couple of millimeters, something like that. But it's extremely fragile. And of course, it's meant to be that way as a welcoming environment for the fertilized ovum that's coming down the fallopian tube. Now, those blood vessels that I described earlier, lined by the ACE2 receptor, they're also present in the lining of the endometrium, the lining of the uterus. And so what should be a very welcoming environment for the fertilized ovum suddenly is very different. It's an area of devastation. The tissue is disrupted. The endometrium is bleeding. The little blood vessels in the endometrium are either thrombosing or bleeding. And that, we believe, is one of the principal reasons why fertility is being affected.
Wow. That's inflammation there, I gather, is what you're talking about.
Not inflammation as such.
Right.
A direct attack on the blood vessels, causing the blood vessels in the endometrium to have these tiny, tiny thrombi blood clots in the very fragile vessels in the endometrium. And that results in the endometrium breaking down, which is, of course, the reason a woman has a period every month. The endometrium breaks down very, very readily in order to refresh itself, to be inviting for implantation of a fertilized ovum.
That's a big concern for the future of the human race, really, with fertility being affected. Another concern people have is whether if you went to hospital and you had a blood transfusion and that blood was from someone who'd had one of those jabs, would you be also at risk if you were unvaccinated but you had a transfusion of vaccinated, so-called vaccinated blood?
Well, depending on where you live, and I can't speak to every jurisdiction, but there are certain intervals that the Red Cross is using you can't donate if you've been vaccinated, less than a couple of weeks ago, for example. The maximum production of the spike protein is within a few days of being injected. To my knowledge, there have not been reports of people developing systemic reactions to transfusion of blood from someone who's been recently given the clot shot. It does not seem to be a currently reported problem. But I would also say this, having run a blood bank, one has to bear in mind that as theoretical as that risk is, if you're being asked to accept a blood transfusion, it's usually for a very good medical reason. Your life may be at risk. There could be all kinds of complications if you let your hemoglobin level drop too low. So in a balanced risk situation, it's probably much better to have the transfusion than it is to worry about the risk of it having come from someone who's recently had the clot shot.
I fully understand if you need blood and you're about to die, you'd take any blood despite the risk or potential risk. But it is a question that pops up quite regularly. Also, another question I have is with regard to some of these objects that have been found in the blood of those who have taken these clot shots. Some of them are quite strange looking man-made objects, don't look natural at all. They've got straight lines and then there's talk of graphene I really don't know. Is that conspiracy nonsense, or is there something valid about these observations?
Well, first of all, these observations need to be confirmed with a strict chain of custody to make sure that nothing has happened to that sample before it starts getting examined. If we were to assume for a minute that no one's messed with the sample, personally, I do not believe that there's been an intentional admixture of all kinds of foreign elements into these vaccines in order to hurt people. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Mm. What I do believe is that given the nature of the manufacturing process of large volumes in a very short period of time, very rushed, I suspect that there has been great variation in the quality assurance of the manufacturing, and that some of the steps in that process may well have resulted in foreign objects getting into the production vat. Mm-hmm. That is, I believe, is what they're seeing. I think the whole graphene oxide thing is, frankly, until proven, has to be questioned as more of a conspiracy theory than anything.
Oh, I fully agree with that scientific approach. My background's mechanical engineering. I don't have any medical science background, but I do understand the scientific method, and that's what everyone should be doing, not jumping to conclusions, looking at the evidence and seeing where that may lead. Then there's another question, is that do these COVID injections present a risk of cancer? Or if someone is in remission from cancer, would it increase the chance of the cancer coming back? Or for anyone who has never had cancer, would they be at greater risk of getting cancer following one of these clot shots?
Yes, indeed. The answer is a double yes. Dr. Ryan Cole, a wonderful pathologist in Idaho, was the first to draw attention to what he perceived to be an increased prevalence of cancer in the biopsies that he was seeing routinely in his surgical pathology laboratory. Now, we use a technical word, pathogenesis, the mechanism by which this could have happened. Multiple issues involved here. The first one is that the immune system is not there primarily, as most people think, to prevent you from getting infected with anything. The immune system's principal purpose in life is to identify anything entering your body that's not you. Mm. Now, bugs are not you. Bacteria and pathogenic viruses like COVID are not you. And so the body goes into action trying to get rid of them. But cancer is also not you. Cancer is different from you. Cancer is there because there have been mutations, changes in the DNA, which identify the cells to the immune system as not you. Mm-hmm. We believe that every second of every day, whether you're sleeping or what, from birth to death, your immune system is silently surveilling every nook and cranny in your body for those very small cancers that we're all developing, we believe, all the time, and killing them off before they get to a size where they become a clinical cancer that ends up killing you. That's an unbelievably efficient process because, generally speaking, we don't die of cancer until we're in our 80s. Mm. Now, that is the normal process. Now, if you start messing around with the immune system, as we're doing with the clot shot, it doesn't just produce blood clots as we described, but it's also suppressing the efficiency of the immune system to attack foreign objects, not just bugs, but also destroying cancer. Mm. The efficiency of the immune system is seriously suppressed. That's why we're seeing people come down with shingles, for example, after they've received the clot shot. Mm. So the mechanism by which cancer can be encouraged, you might say, that is one element in the process. The other element in the process, is a bit more scary, because it's now been, just let me rewind for a minute. There's always been dogma in genetics that there's a one-way system from DNA, the blueprint inside the nucleus, to the messenger that creates the blueprint to make a particular protein called RNA. And then the RNA manufactures or creates the protein that's required to make the enzymes to make your cells function. It's a three-step process, but the dogma was always one way, DNA to RNA to protein. It's now been shown in a petri dish with liver cells, human liver cells, that in fact it can go the other way. So it's been shown, that the RNA from the clot shot can be what we call reverse transcribed upwards into DNA, where it may well be a permanent injection into that genomic structure. Now, we do not know where in the normal genome that insertion takes place. Is it random? Is it next to genes that we know can promote cancer? We don't know.
That's amazing stuff. Yeah, can I just interject there, Roger? We need to take a break. This is TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
So you just can't wait for the day when fossil fuels are no more, huh? Get rid of that gasoline-run vehicle and plug in the new EV. Adjust that thermostat so you sweat in the summer and freeze in the winter. And don't forget those solar panels that need to go up on your roof. Or maybe you'd better forget about them altogether. That's kind of what Amazon did. CNBC reports that documents show Amazon took all of their U.S. solar rooftops offline last year. Why? Well, there was a slight problem. Between April 2020 and June 2021, solar panels atop Amazon fulfillment centers caught fire or experienced electrical explosions at least six different times. That's right, CNBC reports that Amazon blamed third-party partners and vendors for most of the significant problems. Hey, all I know is if Amazon can't get solar panels right, you might want to think twice about putting that stuff on your roof. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Claims that renewables are cheap or will lower prices are proven false. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck here, and my special guest is Dr. Roger Hodgkinson. So before the break, you came up with a pretty wild revelation. This is that... effectively, if I'm right, our DNA could potentially be changed by these clot shots. Is that the way to read it?
That's precisely correct. And what is, of course, particularly concerning is this was an experiment in a petri dish. It has to be replicated by other people, but we believe it to be true. The serious concern, of course, with that is that insertion into DNA becomes permanent. And if that is also occurring in the gametes, spermatozoa, for example, then, or ovaries, ova in the ovaries, this could be a transgenerational impact. We don't know. One of the many things we don't know that's of deep concern. But beyond that, there's an additional mechanism that's involved that could be part of why cancer is escaping control. And that is the spike protein has another effect. When a cell divides, a normal cell divides into two daughter cells, there's supposed to be, and there usually is, extremely accurate copying so that each daughter cell is identical to the other. It's not, however, an absolutely perfect process. And the body, our bodies, clever as they are, our immune system is unbelievably miraculous in its many and various functions. There's a separate function of checking for the perfection of that copying, such that if an inaccurate copy is made, that inaccurate copy is destroyed. The the spike protein is now known to interfere with that normal quality assurance process, so that mutations that are occurring in that faulty copying, some of those mutations may be what we call oncogenes, genes that cause cancer. So there are many, many aspects of why, many explanations of why cancer could be emerging in the scale that it is.
This is very, very big stuff. And we need to take political action so that we have change in our governments, because I'm in Australia, you're in Canada. It doesn't matter where you are, just about any country has gone along with this complete insanity. Most of the countries have either had mandates to some extent or just really just pushed the propaganda campaign that these so-called vaccines are safe and effective. Of course, we know now that they're not, but they should have known early in the piece. This means we urgently need some political change. Now, I know that you've mentioned you're seeing something happen in Canada there. Can you just explain what's happening there with the freedom movement? What's happened since the truckers' protests? What are the new developments?
Well, the truckers were the instigator of making us all aware of the what happens with progressive loss of freedoms. But sadly, the reality of that wonderful demonstration, and I was there in Ottawa, I was on the flat deck, I was talking to the crowds. Sadly, the reality of that wonderful outpouring of resistance has not resulted in much change politically. The way mandates are administered, mask policies, vaccination policy, etc. To give you an example of that, in Canada, we're now going to start in vaccinating so-called children, despite the fact that it's been now stopped in Britain and in Denmark for good reason. They don't need it, and they're being killed by it. I call it child sacrifice. So it is. There really has been great reluctance by the authorities in Ottawa and in Washington, the people who've inflicted this on us with no evidence whatsoever. A little sidebar comment here for people to go away with. All you have to know is two words. Nothing worked. I mean, nothing worked, whether it was mass, social distancing, testing, travel bans, quarantine, the clot shot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing worked.
I remember you saying that very early in the piece, and it couldn't be truer today.
They dug themselves into this hole, and the traditional reaction politically, of course, if you screwed up, is to double down. So there's been a realization in Alberta here that moving the needle federally is almost impossible. And the best way for us to go forward with revitalizing democratic principles is to move towards an independent Republic of Alberta, which is gaining incredible momentum with huge numbers attending rallies that I'm presenting at in various parts of the province. We're not there yet. It will culminate in what we believe to be a 1 million plus signatures on a referendum that demands the premier of this province negotiates a better deal with Ottawa, which is guaranteed to fail, and that would then result in the declaration of independence. We believe that is doable within the next 3 years.
That's an interesting development because the globalists have captured nations. They have captured some state governments, not all, and they've captured local councils. But if a government doesn't represent the people can rise up. It's an interesting prospect there of having Alberta really declaring itself effectively sovereign. Do you put it down to the thinking in Alberta is more independent than the rest of Canada.
Oh, totally, totally. But the intoxicating feeling, Jeremy, is this. This movement started here in Alberta. I was on the tarmac where the truckers started from, right here in Alberta. And if this eventually culminates in a process of such revulsion by the general population that we can encourage the emergence of a Republic of Alberta, which would be the freest, happiest, most prosperous democracy on earth, it would be wonderful to live here, but the intoxication is because we could then become a beacon for the rest of the world as to how to redefine politics along the traditional lines of family, religion, hard work, risk-taking, etc. That would be an incredible conclusion to a process that has started.
It's going to be an interesting development, because I know here in Australia we have some states that seem to have a bit more of a rebel streak. I know in Queensland they voted many years ago for Pauline Hanson. Around about a quarter of the population voted her in the state election. And there's always been a bit more of a rebel streak in Queensland, whereas in my state down in Victoria, which is down south, we've got Dan Andrews, who gave us the most lockdown city in the whole world. And unfortunately, most Victorians have just gone along with the agenda, and to the point where it's looking like the opinion polls are showing that Premier Dan Andrews will be re-elected. It's pretty wild that so many people have just gone along with the agenda, and it's really part of this mass formation psychosis, isn't it?
Well, I would say wait a year. A year is a long time in politics. Mm. You know, investigative journalists must currently be writing the definitive autopsy of what happened for the lay public, thin booklets, bullet format. And I believe that when the scale of the big kill starts sinking in, the scale of children being killed with this clot shot, when the scale of this starts sinking in because of investigative journalists, you can't stop the basement printing press. Martin Luther showed that. When that revulsion sinks in, I don't think, as I said earlier, we're prepared for the scale of revulsion that's going to result.
I think many of the journalists won't say anything because they know that they're funded by Big Pharma and they dare not lose their jobs. But it's becoming, as you say, that the scale is becoming so horrendous that it's pretty hard to shut this out. And more people are talking behind the scenes. The internet is full of all sorts of material, and it cannot be just written off as conspiracy theories. I mean, we have credible people such as yourself and many other very highly qualified doctors. You just can't dismiss you or Peter McCullough or Robert Malone, all these people, can we?
This isn't just the biggest catastrophe ever in medicine, with all kinds of horrible consequences, not just for individuals, but for the loss of trust that's being produced at all levels in society. It's not just that. It's the opportunity that it creates to change things. That's why I'm so optimistic about the future.
Well, that's really good to hear. We have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted you to end on a positive note. So that's good that you have this sense of optimism, because I do, but I'm also a realist. I know that the globalists, they have an agenda. This is the World Economic Forum. And that's not a conspiracy theory. You just quote the people involved, Klaus Schwab. And they'll keep doubling down. So it's not going to be an easy battle, but at the same time, I think it is a winnable battle, but it's going to be long and hard. What do you think? Just your final comments.
They've overplayed their hand. Listen, Klaus, we've got your number. We're coming for you now. It's the great reject, Klaus. You're done. There are more of us than you. And we're going to win this thing, because losing is not an option.
Exactly right. Losing is not an option. I've I've been a long-time follower of politics, and I know from what I've seen from particularly when 9/11 struck, and I saw that this era of politics, and I know from what I've seen from particularly when 9/11 struck, and I saw that this is just not right, doesn't sit right. We've been led astray, the war on terror, there's all this fear, 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 and then COVID happened and it just hit me for a six, and I was wondering how can we keep going on like this? But surely people are going to snap out of it, and they better. And it's been fantastic having you on the show, TNT Radio. Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, we must have you back again. It's a pleasure to have you on TNT Radio. Now we're up for the news in just a few more seconds. We'll be right back.